Hi, I'm Kevin Turner, and welcome to this week's Realty Talk Show. Commercial property can be an incredibly reliable source of income because it can generate steady cash flow over long periods with long-term leases in place. However, there's a perception commercial property doesn't perform as well when it comes to capital growth and value appreciation. Does this really hold true? Well, we get the opinion of a buyer's agent who specializes in commercial property investment. We do that today in the show. Also today, according to listingportaldomain.com.au, the number of homes being leased in Victoria has fallen for the first time since records began, and that number of new rental property listings across the state is also lower, by nearly 14% over this time last year. Now, could it be related to the 132 Residential Tenancy Act changes that have been implemented by the Victorian state government? Well, Bushy is joined by leading Victorian property management trainer and consultant David Woodfull today to find out. And David is the driver of the National Property Management Institute, so his thoughts should carry a lot of weight. Hey, before we start, I want to thank our supporters and content partners, realty.com.au, BMT Tax Depreciation, Know How Property Finance, Get Rare Property, and Apiro Marketing. And if this is your first time with us, big welcome. You're going to find us on all podcast players and through the Southern Cross Oz Stereo Network. Hey, if you like the show, please hit the subscribe button. Help us to continue to bring you the best guests every week. And don't forget too, you can join the conversation anytime on Facebook by going to the Property Hub Collective. Remember that, the Property Hub Collective, and we look forward to seeing you and your comments on Facebook. We'll be back in just a moment.
Property deductions can save you thousands of dollars each year. To make sure you maximise deductions, you need to work with the most experienced quantity surveyor in the country. BMT Tax Depreciation is the leading specialist in the industry. They've completed over 700,000 tax deduction schedules for residential investment and commercial properties Australia-wide. BMT guarantee to find double your fee in the first full financial year deductions. Call BMT on 1300 728 726 today for an obligation-free quote.
Realty Talk and your host, Bushy Martin.
Now, it's well known that commercial property can be an incredibly reliable source of income, allowing investors to generate steady cash flow through rental payments on long-term leases. And alongside this, there's a commonly held perception the commercial property doesn't perform as well when it comes to capital growth and value appreciation. But does this really hold true? Is commercial property investment just a cash flow play? Well, to dive into the myths and shed some true light on commercial property investment performance and opportunities, we're joined again by commercial real estate buyer's agent, mentor, thought leader, and fellow podcast host, Mish Daniel, the founder of Revolve Commercial. So welcome back to the show, Mish.
Hi, Bushy. Good to be here. Thank you for getting me back on the show.
Absolutely. Now, this is another good subject to dive into and to potentially smash the myths that surround the commercial arena. So let's start by getting you to talk to us about why and how does commercial property provide steady, reliable cash flow over time?
Well, I just want to go right back to something that you said a little earlier and smash that myth right out of the way before we even start. This myth about commercial property not growing at the same rate as residential, taboo, 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 okay, 100% taboo. And the reason why I'm saying that is because if you look at, let's just take, for instance, a new development, an area where they're releasing greenlands and they are developing residential property. What's the very next thing that they put in there? Commercial, okay? Now, why wouldn't the commercial be valued at the same or better rate than residential? It doesn't make sense. So in other words, let's dial it back a little bit and go into an area that is an older area where you've got existing commercial properties in a gentrifying area. People are moving in, they're renovating houses, they're doing uplifts, they're adding value to the properties. What sort of commercial spaces are they going to want to frequent? Something that is within line to being a beautiful precinct where they're very happy to go to. So automatically what happens is that just raises the bar, raises the standard, raises the value. So hopefully I've just smashed that out the way.
Good. Well, I was going to leave that question until the end to keep people with their breaths bated, but you've smashed through that one already. So let's go back onto the cash flow component then and just reinforce why and how you think that commercial property does provide such steady, reliable cash flow.
Okay, so if we have a look again, the difference between residential and commercial. Residential, you've got short leases, 6 months, 12-month leases, and there's not a lot of stability in that. In commercial, we go after minimum 3-year leases, and to sweeten that, we really love to see 5 plus 5s. Now, for those of you that don't know what the 5 plus 5 is or the 3 plus 3 is in a commercial lease, and this is really, really important information for you to understand, is on a commercial lease, if you've got a little +3 behind it, the lenders and the banks look at that as a 6-year lease. Why? Because it gives your tenant the option to dictate whether they want to stay on or move off. Okay. Yep. So if you see something that is a 3 plus 3 plus 3, that is seen as a 9-year lease, or a 5 plus 5, that is seen as a 10-year lease. And that in itself just shows the commitment by the tenant to want to stay there. So with regards reliability, cash flow, there are many other factors that come into that. One of the other factors would be, and this is the beauty about commercial leases, is you can drill down and have a look at what the incremental increases are. What are the, are there rent reviews? So in other words, if you've got rent reviews, let's say COVID, for instance, okay, all the rents were kind of sitting at around about the same rate. People that had 3-year leases that didn't have a rent review in it were just ticking along. Then they came along to the end of their term, let's say at the end of 3 years. Now they are renting a property, let's say for $200 per square meter, but everything else around them is going for $300 a square meter. Now they've been running their business there, their address is there, they're known there, their clients come there. Do they really want to risk leaving their tenancy for a couple of $100s? And even if they do, they'd have to move out of the area to go and find something else that is cost effective, exactly the same, at a massive cost of moving. So effectively, what they do is they look around and say, oh, well, you know what, we're going to be paying $300 down the road. We're well known here. We're comfortable here. Everything's working now. We'll just stay here. So now your rent's gone from 200 to 300,000. And just bearing in mind, at 7% for every dollar that you're making additional on your rental, there's a huge chunk of value that's being thrown at that.
Yeah, it's a really important
I won't go into
point.
The numbers right now, but.
Yeah, and that's something we'll dive into when you and I enjoy the long form our discussion on the Get Invested podcast, just to really put some shape around that. And I think you make some really good points. There are some golden handcuffs from a tenant perspective in relation to commercial property, which are pretty significant hurdles for a tenant. Providing the business is stable and it's performing well, they provide some pretty big barriers to prevent them from racing off somewhere else, as opposed to the ease of doing it in the residential space. Now, what I want to pivot now and talk about very briefly, if we can, please, Mish, is the tax benefits associated with commercial property. Because as we know, in most forms of property, if you structure this well and you take advantage of it, you can make a significant improvement to the overall financial performance through taking advantage of those. So break some of those tax benefits on commercial down for us if you can.
Okay, well, I'd say first off, let's have a look at depreciation. All right. And now bearing in mind every single thing that you're putting in there, I'm just gonna focus on the fit out. Firstly, let's say you're putting a $200,000 fit out into your commercial property. Now your tenant's paying for that fit out. They might be paying for it over 12 months or 24 months, But who gets the depreciation on it? You do. And that's a massive depreciation that you get on that, which is just, it's honey, money for jam. It's lollies. The interest deductions, I'm just going to name a couple of areas where, you know, the advantages are interest deductions, the ability to defer capital. So what we mean by that is when you're purchasing a commercial property, now, one of the first things that we do with all of our clients is I say, number one, don't ever put it in your own name, okay? I'm not licensed to give advice on how you want to purchase that property, but I can tell you that what most of our clients do is they put them into entities. And the reason they do that is for the tax benefits and the asset protection.
Yep. Yep.
So that's one of the biggest reasons you wanting to be putting it in. And we have a lot of clients that complain. They say, oh, but that costs us $2,000 a year or whatever. Pay it. Seriously. It is well worth it.
Absolutely.
You know, for the benefits that you're getting out of it. Yep. Sorry, for those tax defers, for your capital gains, you can defer your capital gains. Should you decide to sell that property, you can defer your capital gains into other entities. So if you've got the right accountant, you'll be singing all the way.
Yeah, beautifully said. And let's face it, you and I both know that property is an elite team sport. So having specialists in each and every key position in that team is really paramount to optimizing the performance of the properties that you buy. I now want to turn back to an area that's a favorite for me, and that's the lending space. We did touch on it in our previous discussion when we caught up on the show. But I'd love for you to talk a little bit about how commercial property can be leveraged through financing to allow investors to control a larger asset base.
Okay, so we've spoken a little bit about lines of credit and drawing down on equity. And I guess one of the best parts of commercial real estate is working with in joint ventures. So if you're bringing a partner in, now there are various different ways of doing that. You could have somebody who is you're partnering who owns the land or owns the building and you wanting to do an upgrade on the property, working together in that sort of partnership. You are leveraging, adding value and taking a, let's say, $1 million worth of property to a $2 million worth of property. You do a refinance on that asset at $2 million or any uplift that you're creating in that property. You're leveraging off that. You're taking a loan against the improvements that you've done and you go and do it again. So that is just one of the many, many strategies that you can do in commercial property. And the other thing is pulling your assets together. So let's say for argument's sake, you can afford $1 million and you've got a couple of mates that could probably afford something similar. So instead of going and buying a property for $1 million, it's going to give you a 6% return. That's $60,000 on average. You could be pooling your asset and buying an asset between two or three mates where you're buying a $2 million or a $3 million property. Now that 6% is now worth $180,000. Okay, so your capital expenses are a hell of a lot lower. You're buying a better quality asset and you're running it like a business through partnerships. And again, I'm going to say through entities, use the structure of entities. And if you don't know anything about the entities, I'm sure we will dive into them at a later stage. And you get those tax benefits on it. And that is leveraging hard.
Yeah.
Rinse and repeat.
Spot on. And correct me if I'm wrong here, Mish, but my peripheral understanding of this space is that one of the associated benefits with that is if you're able to increase the rental attractiveness of a property and the dollars going through, from a lender's perspective, that potentially can increase the perceived value that they'll borrow against that will enable you to then leverage that into further acquisitions. Am I right in saying that?
Massively, massively. We work on something called WALE, so it's weighted average lease I got that wrong, but anyway, it's the average of your leases. So if you've got, for instance, 10 tenants, and you've got most of your tenants that are on a 3 or a 4 year lease, your weighted average lease term is going to be, let's say, 3.5. Now, the lenders love that because, bearing in mind, what do the lenders want? They want security. They want to know that they are going to get their money back. So they're looking at the full gestalt of the property, and they're going to be looking at the lease term. So if your lease terms are nice and long, they'll lend. They'll give you more money. They'll lend against it. They can see that it's a stable asset. It's going in the right direction, and away you go. You can draw down equity, use that, and do it again.
Yeah,
So you're
exactly right.
leveraging a
So,
lot faster. A lot
absolutely, it's
quicker and faster.
great opportunities there. What I want to close on today, and again, we've only just scratched the surface, but in a world where inflation's on everyone's lips, and the concerns that people having around that, can you talk to us a little bit about how commercial property can actually be used as an inflation hedge?
Very much so. So traditionally, commercial real estate has been one of the most stable assets right across the board. And I mean, if you go back through all the ups and the downs, you probably find that commercially, the assets have taken a maximum of around about a 10% dip. Okay, so hedging against that as as an asset has been recorded as one of the best assets to have. Now, if you have a look at funds, let's say your bigger funds, have a look at where their investments are. A majority of the investments are commercial property. And in fact, Bushy, a silly little story I'll tell you. When I was 22 years old, no, when I was 18 years old, I bought shares in a fund. And when I was 22, I had a look at the shares and I thought, these are worth nothing. So I went and I had a look at where they're investing, and I saw that they're investing in commercial real estate. And I thought, well, you know what? If they can do it, I can do it. So that's actually how I started my journey. So it's a great hedge against inflation for a number of reasons, because your rentals stay the same. Your rentals, you get your incremental increases. You're getting the value of the property, the gentrification of the property. So it's not only the value on the leases, and so that people really understand how that works is in residential, your property is going to be valued by what is happening in the area or the city or wherever you're living. In commercial, your property is going to be valued on that as well as the strength of your lease over that period of you continuing to receive income on that asset.
Yeah, beautifully said.
So it's a great hedge.
Yeah, absolutely. No, well said. Well, look, again, we've only really just started to scratch the surface on this, but I'd really want to take the opportunity to thank you for opening our eyes to the considerable cash flow and capital growth opportunities that you've alerted us to in commercial property, Mish. And for those who'd like to know more, make sure you have listened to the two-part special deep dive that Mish and I enjoyed on the growing commercial property on our Property Hub's long-form Get Invested podcast. Make sure you tune into Mish's popular Revolve Commercial Property podcast, and feel free to reach out to Mish and the Revolve Commercial team at revolvecommercial.com.au just by clicking the link on the show notes. So thanks again for sharing your insights and joining us on the show today, Mish.
Thank you, Bushy. Yet again, lovely chatting to you as always.
Successful property investment is a game of finance. Do you have the right team and the right game plan? Realty Talk is brought to you by Know How Property. More than mortgage brokers, Bushy Martin and his team of investment architects set you up with a sustainable strategy structured to lower your costs, tax, risk, and stress while increasing your capacity for growth. Know How has helped over 1,900 homeowners and investors secure more than $800 million in property wealth. So get set to live more, work less, and live your legacy. Want to know how to invest in your freedom? Visit knowhowproperty.com.au.
This is Realty Talk. powered by realty.com.au.
Now, according to a recent Domain article, the number of homes being leased in Victoria has fallen for the first time since records began. And the number of new rental property lettings across the state has plummeted by nearly 14% over the last year and is continuing to fall. So it's no wonder that rental vacancies in the Garden State are at record lows as the worsening rental crisis shows no end in sight. All this at a time when a raft of 132 Progressive Residential Tenancy Act changes have been putting increasing pressure and cost imposition on landlord rental providers. So is there a correlation between the two? Are the amendments to the Victorian Residential Tenancy Act contributing to the difficulties landlords and residential rental providers are facing that's leading to the lack of rental properties, and if so, how? Because what happens in Victoria generally ripples out across the rest of the states. So to shed some light on this, we're joined by leading Victorian property management trainer and consultant David Wolfall, the driver of the National Property Management Institute and VCAT legislation go-to guy. So welcome to Realty Talk, David.
Thank you for having me, Bushy.
Looking forward to this conversation. I think the insights you're about to share are going to be quite revealing. So to sort of get things underway, can you sort of start by sharing a quick summary of some of the key Victorian Residential Tenancy Act changes that have been progressively introduced in recent years?
Yeah, certainly, Bushy. As you said, there's been 132 odd changes to the Act, probably not that many that are overly important to landlords themselves. But probably the main ones that people are concerned about is the automatic or almost automatic allowance that gets into a property, minimum standards, disclosures, and a section of the Residential Tenancies Act, which is called the Reasonable and Proportionate Test, Section 330A, which is creating a fair bit of concern through VCAT. So they're probably the main ones that are of concern to landlords and property managers across the board.
I can imagine. Well, we might dig into those shortly, but we hear a lot about increasing taxes and costs that are squeezing landlords out. But are there other aspects relating to these 2021 RTA amendments that are actually contributing to low rental supply, in your opinion? And if so, why would that be the case?
Yeah, look, certainly I believe the amendments or some aspects of the amendments are contributing to a lower supply. I've been concerned about, but doesn't seem to be mentioned that much, is in regards to developers. We are hearing a lot of complaints that there's no lower or affordable housing, as they call it. And one of the problems that we have with the developers buying into blocks of land, and they quite often buy older homes on a block of land, and they're going to need to leave that home there for a year, maybe 2 years or 3 years, whilst they get approvals and get their building process in place. Unfortunately, being old homes, they're almost ready for knockdown. They're nowhere near the minimum standards that have been mandated need to be done. But as long as they can be made safe, can't there be some allowance for not fulfilling all the minimum standards? Because surely it's better for them to be giving some cheap housing over that 2 to 3 year period and putting a roof over somebody's head who otherwise is sleeping in their car. So that's one area. But also you've got the minimum standards overall. We're seeing a lot of expense, people having to go to a lot of expense to bring the homes up. Safety checks, there's a lot of confusion within both property managers and landlords that they're actually compliance checks, but they're not, they're safety checks. So a lot of landlords are seeing non-compliant on these reports and having to spend money or thinking they have to spend money remodeling kitchens and so forth. Some think it's easier just to get away from it altogether. And again, that reasonable and proportionate test is seeing it very difficult to take back the home. Now, we're not talking, I mean, you have your evictions and everything for rent not paid, but you've got a number of owners want to move back into a property. For one reason or another, they might need to because they've come back to Victoria or that was their planned retirement home, and they're just finding it really hard to get it because of this reasonable and proportionate argument that they've got to put.
Very interesting semantics. So flowing on from this then, David, what's your view on what's having the biggest impact on both landlord rental providers and property managers? And what are some of the flow-on consequences from this?
I think the things that I mentioned at the start as being probably the main changes, they're having the biggest impact overall on property managers and property owners. Again, we mentioned the minimum standards and the safety checks, which are often confused as compliance checks, and reasonable and proportionate. And what they're doing is they're creating a lot more cost on owners. They're creating a lot more stress on the property managers as well. And I've had many conversations with property managers who are almost in tears because they've been to VCAT to try and get a house back for somebody with very good reason. And don't get me wrong, I'm not in favour of evicting people for the sake of it. If they've got a good reason, they need to move into it, they can't afford it because the rent's not being paid, property managers are doing everything they can to help their landlords, yet they're going to VCAT, they're getting told, no, you can't have property back because we don't want the tenant to be homeless. And then they've got to try and explain to their client why they can't get the property back for them. And it's causing a great deal of anxiety and stress. And consequently, we've seen around about 25 to 30% of property managers leave the industry over the past 3 or 4 years.
That's a very concerning exercise when you're getting that level of expertise leaving the industry. And, you know, with the industry getting much more litigic than it ever has been, there's never a greater time for those experienced professionals to be looking after landlord and rental providers' needs. And it's clear, just joining the dots from what you've indicated, with those properties that can't be occupied, there's an immediate reduction of available properties. And then with the potential cost impost that's being imposed by these changes, that would be scaring the horses a lot in terms of the landlord need to go, well, let's just get out of this. And then you've got that extra pressure on the property managers. That's pretty much a cascading impact there. I guess the obvious question to close on then, David, is to, you know, if we were to try and reverse this concerning trend, what changes to the RTA would you like to see to help alleviate the issues that rental providers are facing in order to actually help increase rental supply?
There's probably only two that I think could make a huge difference to the problems we're suffering with rental supply. Yes, there's probably a lot that can be changed in many ways there, but the two main ones I see, making a change to that Section 330A reasonable and proportionate argument, because landlords and property managers are just feeling the property's not theirs anymore. I was having a discussion with a property manager recently, and we were talking about a feeling that it's become social housing, but the government's not investing in it, that they're using the mums and dads investors' homes as social housing because of that reasonable and proportionate test. So I'd like to see some changes made to that, particularly one of the points, the 10th point on reasonable and proportionate says, and anything else the tribunal thinks relevant. So you go through a number of points. Is this the renter's sole problem? Yes, you can easily answer that, but you get down to this, is it anything else the tribunal thinks is relevant? Opens a can of worms. So I'd really like to see that change. Maybe have some aspect of it still left there, but the majority of that reasonable and proportionate, I think, has to be changed or removed. So it gives people back their home, it becomes, or their house, and they can use it as they see fit. And the other aspect I'd really like to see changed is going back to what I was saying about the developers and them not wanting to lease out the property because they don't want all that expense. Maybe with the minimum standards, there can be an exemption made for development property. So, you know, if the property's safe, you can lease it out, maybe lease it out for less than everything else, but we'd like to have that in the marketplace. So, you know, you don't need to meet minimum standards as long as it's safe.
Very well said. And at a time when, you know, we've never seen rental vacancies as low as they are, not just here in Victoria, but across most parts of Australia, you'd be thinking that all levels of the government would be looking at every opportunity to try and provide some sort of shelter for those in need. And I guess, as you've well said, the sort of discretionary grey area that creeps into the interpretation is clearly not helping the landlord's sense of control over their own asset. And you know, as you mentioned, mum and dad investors are providing between 70% to 80% of the rental stock in the country. So clearly some changes that need to be made there. So I looked on. Really want to thank you for drawing attention to this very important but generally unseen issue, David, that clearly reinforces the need for politicians and policymakers to think long and hard about the unforeseen consequences of their actions and the growing need to embrace landlord, rental providers, investors and property managers as the solution rather than the problem to our housing and rental crisis. And we encourage anyone in the industry to reach out to you at the National Property Management Institute by clicking the link in the show notes. So thanks again for your time on the Property Head today, David.
Fantastic. It's been a pleasure, Bushy.
Are you curious about harnessing your super for property investment? Propel your future with the enlightening online seminar, The Ultimate Masterclass to Self-Managed Superfund Property Mastery. Reserve your spot now at getrare.com.au/SMSF. Spearheaded by Rasti from independent buyers agency Get Rare Properties, this masterclass unravels strategic property investment using your self-managed superannuation fund. You know, it's not just about learning. It's about transforming your financial future through education. So embrace this opportunity to enrich your investing acumen. Enroll now in the free masterclass and begin a journey that marries insight with action, leading to a financially empowered tomorrow.
Unlock bonus content now as a premium subscriber.
And that brings us to the end of this week's show. Make sure you don't miss a single episode of Realty Talk or Bushy's Get Invested podcast, both delivered to you each week. And you can do that by subscribing to the Property Hub now on your favorite podcast player or wherever you are listening to or watching this show. Also, don't forget, you can join the conversation anytime on Facebook by going to the Property Hub Collective. Thanks to our supporters and content partners, realty.com.au, BMT Tax Depreciation, Know How Property Finance, Get Rare Property, and Apiro Marketing. I'm Kevin Turner, and on behalf of Bushy and the Property Hub team, we look forward to seeing you again next week.